standing behind one of those things. Yes, I should apologize for giving so many speeches. Anybody who's heard it more than once is quite free to get up and walk out right now. Nothing I can do about that. Or I'm going to try to take a different point of view. Just as introduction, this is National Historic Preservation Week. In Portland, it's been having all kinds of affairs going on all week. Among them, a slideshow given by one of the city planners and architects at Meyer Frank's, the title of which is, How Do We Know It Is Us Without Our Past? He's going to show slides of the old houses and the old buildings, which is a title I like because I think it states a fact. I've been studying Forest Grove history off and on for about 10 years from different points of view, and decided to limit myself to the 19th century to stop at 1900 because there are too many people still living here who have been here since after 1900. So I'm relatively safe and talk about people who aren't going to answer back. I got interested just from general curiosity at first, but very soon I found out that Forest Grove is really a very unusual town, an exceptionally apt town to study 19th century history. For one thing, there is a diary that was kept by the first settler, Alvin Thompson Smith, and it's in the library at the Oregon Historical Society now. And it consists of an entry of what he did every day from the time he arrived here in September 1841 until 3 years before he died in 1888. So it's a whole series of little notebooks about this size with daily entries. And fortunately, he did it in India ink so that it has lasted quite well. And this diary gives more information about what happened here and, in fact, in much of Washington County, including from Hillsborough, in the first 20 years, in the 40s and the 50s, in any other source I have found, and it's immediate, so that you get the feel for it. The second thing that I found out before I'd gone too far was when I gave the first talk I ever gave to the local historical society, and there were grandchildren of many of the pioneers that I had talked about, which I hadn't known before, how many descendants, third and fourth generations now, descendants of the original pioneers who came here in the 40s and the 50s, who are living here in town now. Many of you probably know who they are, the Walkers, descendants of the Buxtons, the Naylors, the Smiths, not A.T. Smith, even then the children, and Hinman and Bell, and it's quite a number of descendants. So that it makes Forest, and then the third factor that's different is that Forest Grove has so many buildings, houses and business buildings that were built in the 19th century, still here, still in use, and still relevant. So that it makes the 19th century history of Forest Grove very immediate and real to us, more so than it would be true for many towns. I put together I found a great many different sources. At first there didn't seem to be any, but then I found a great many different sources, including many of them in this library, as well as in the college library. And I put it together in decades so I could keep track of it, and soon saw that Forest Grove history is easily divided into four periods, or quite evidently consists of four periods in the 19th century. Now, there are many very interesting events and people which I've talked about in other talks I've given, but it takes too long for this program. Besides, I've done it several times. Now I want to look at the history of Forest Grove, just outlining it for you, with a different question in mind. Namely, what happened? What events influenced what kind of a town Forest Grove has become, particularly what it became by the 1900 period. Events and attitudes, and I want to put together a case that I would be happy to hear criticized then, if you have time for that. The first Forest Grove was started, well, the region was first settled by A.T. Smith in September of 1841. He settled on the land that is south of the lumber mill down at the end of Elm Street on the sloping hillside that runs down to the Qualiton River from about where 10th Street is, about where the new highway is now, from there down the river. That was his land and where he started his farm. And during the next 15 years, he and his wife were the only people out here for the first 2 years. But after that, there was slow settlement. And during the next 15 years, all the good farmland was taken for a 5-mile circle around Forest Grove. That is, the land wasn't taken up on Gale's Peak or in the swamps around the Qualiton down below Gaston. There was quite extensive swamps, or up on Fern Hill or Iowa Hill, but most of the rest of the land was taken by donation land claims. And that is what I took as the end of the pioneer period. Now the event that occurs, it starts what will become Forest Grove, is the mass emigration of families from the eastern states to Oregon, which became a fever and then practically a mania during the late 1840s. It was started and pushed by great newspaper publicity and a lot of sermons by missionaries and a lot of speeches from people in the Congress who wanted to get the West settled, particularly this territory. And then the first settlers that came out here would write back glowing letters to their hometown newspapers. So glowing, very glowing, as we often do when we go to a new place. And we write back and tell them how lucky we are that we're here. Well, the first settlers did that. A.T. Smith did that. He wrote back a letter to the Connecticut newspapers. And Tabitha Brown did it. And they stretched things a little bit over the long term. But when you've been here 4 or 5 years, why, all many of the good things can have occurred at once. Most of the settlers that came out to Oregon in the 1840s and early 50s came from Missouri, Illinois, Iowa, the Mississippi Valley states. But nearly all of them had recently, some of them very recently, others 10 years earlier, had moved to Ohio, Indiana, Illinois, Missouri, Kansas, Iowa, from New England or Virginia or Kentucky, in just the data for the people in this town. An awful lot of them came from those regions, New England or the Virginia region, and usually by way of Missouri. And they came in high hopes, because what they thought was that the Willamette Valley was called a paradise in all the publicity. It was green all year round. It had a good climate. And here you would get better crops than you ever did anywhere in the East, which was partly true, not entirely true. A.T. Smith wrote home that your stock were out of doors year round. I told that once to a man who'd been a farmer just outside of town there, and he snorted and said that wasn't true. And it wasn't for A.T. Smith either after he had written this letter, because there soon was a winter where the snow was 5 feet deep and it stayed on the ground for quite a while. The fact that they would have good crops here, that was true, because particularly in this region, the soil around here is a Willamette loam, very, very deep, going down very deep. So that A.T. Smith, starting in right away his second year, 42, and from then on, averaged 50 to 60 bushels of wheat per acre off this land. And it was so, the soil was so rich that you'd plant 1 year and harvest that year and let the ground sit the next year and harvest a second wheat crop off the land without having reseeded or cultivated or fertilized or anything the year before. The land was very good, especially for wheat. Tabitha Brown wrote back a letter and said that everybody was healthy here, that few people died. Well, she wasn't here. She wrote this letter within 5 years after she got here, and students forgot that many of the weak people died on the way out. The fact was that the main motive that brought the people to this region, to what was called West Fallen Plains, was the hope for free land. Because although the Senate, the United States, hadn't passed the bill to give free land yet, they just assumed that they would, because this had been done in the some of the Midwestern states. So that what they did get, and they did, Senate did pass it, they got 640 acres free to every man and wife together, to any man and wife together who lived on the land for 5 years and farmed. That was the stipulation, so that you didn't get the land legally until after the 5 years were over. I want to pursue, trying to pursue the motives that brought people out there. A second motive was certainly Christianity. Many of the early settlers were missionaries or felt like missionaries. Some of them were ministers and some were not, like A.G. Smith. He was what was called a lay missionary. And this had a special influence on Forest Grove because he picked this place to settle in. He was staying over east of Hillsboro, which was the only part that had any United States American settlers at the time. And he picked this place because of the Indian villages that were believed to be along what is now Ritchie Road, just on the northeast bank of Dale's Creek, and then along with Fallerton, going south. The Indians are what brought Park here. He was over east of Hillsboro for a while. A.G. Smith asked him to move over here and start a church, which was the first church in this town, and then became a congregational church. And Clark is probably the most, Reverend Harvey Clark is the most important early settler of Forest Grove, because he started the first church, he started the first school, and he gave the land for a town. He settled here, as I'll come back to in the next period. And in addition, because Clark was here, other ministers came here to see him and then settled here, and this became a kind of a center for congregational and Presbyterian ministers in particular. Others too, Baptists came here. They often had summer camp meetings, camp meetings in the summer here, and they would go through here. So that there were a lot of ministers in Forest Grove in these first two decades. The less religious, presumably, people, or some of them at least, who were settled east of Hillsboro, are said to have called this Piety Hill. That's what they called Hillsboro. And then the rest of that story is that they called Hillsboro Sin City. The third motive for people coming to Oregon was to save Oregon from the Hudson Bay Company and the predicted from England. And this too was pushed by the publicity in the newspapers in the East. The Hudson Bay Company was the main power, the whole everything here, until about 1845, when the American settlers began to increase in number in the Willamette Valley. And the American Senate was really concerned, the American government was concerned, that England was going to take over all of the Oregon territory down to the California region. That was Spanish at the time. And they really shouldn't. It's just they were so self-confident, they never did start in time. The Americans came out here so fast in the 40s that before England, back the mother country, found what was going on, they had made it impossible for the Hudson Bay Company to take over the Oregon Territory. And as you know, the division was then made between England and the United States, that where the present boundary of the United States is, separating the Oregon Territory, which included present-day Washington, from what is now Canada. Another reason that many of the immigrants came out was to escape from too much government, and this had a real effect on government in Oregon and in this region in particular. For example, in 1843, some people thought we ought to have set up a government for the Oregon Territory, And they really had a hard time getting enough people to come and take part in setting up the government, simply because most people thought, do we really need a government? And then they go back to their home or whatever they were doing, not take any part in it. When they finally did get a first government set up, the people who worked on it insisted that paying taxes should be voluntary, because it was too much government if you were forced to pay taxes. So they ran for 1 year on voluntary taxes, which were practically none, and found that it wouldn't work. So the next year they drew up a new constitution that made the taxes compulsory. And a lot of people, including A.T. Smith, refused to vote because that was too much government. This escape also applied to the pre-Civil War conditions in the middle parts of the United States and in the eastern parts, but particularly in the middle parts. The tension between slave owners, between whether you should have admit Negroes into Oregon, bitter debates that were going on in the east about whether a given state was slave or free. Well, those were extended out here too, and they had arguments on whether they should admit Negroes to Oregon, either slave or free. Now, the kind of people that came here to settle were mostly families, and the men were, most of them were in their upper 20s and or early 30s. Many of them, most of them it seems, had been farmers before they came, and they had to have been reasonably prosperous to get enough money to raise the, buy the equipment to come out on the trip across the plains. There is an amusing description that was written by Peter Burnett, who later was a governor of California. He came out in 42 and settled over here on the Scappoose Plains north of Portland. He wanted to start a city there where the boats would come to, and that's the town of Lynn, which is still there. But nobody else came and settled there, so he came into the Klallam Valley and farmed for a few years, and then left during the gold rush. Eventually came, I believe, the first governor of California. Well, he wrote a description, he wrote a book called An Old California Pioneer, and when he writes about his life here, he says, I never saw so fine a population as I saw in Oregon most of the time while I was there. They were all honest because there was nothing to steal. They were all sober because there was no liquor to drink. There were no misers because there was no money to hoard. And they were all industrious because it was worth their stock. Now, A.T. Smith seems to be the one, the person that I've read the most about. And in many ways, he seems to me typical of the people who came and settled in Forest Grove in these first two decades, first 15 years really, because the later period is different and different kinds of people came here to settle here. He was very helpful to every new settler that would come. He would take them out, they'd stay at his house, he'd take them out to find land to settle on, he'd give them food and seed for his herd for their first winter. He helped them build a cabin because he had a pair of oxen and who were very effective. He would chop, the men would chop, cut down and saw down rather, the trees, and he dragged it with his oxen and put up most of the villages or most of the houses around here in the first years. And he'd lend them stock for breeding. Got Clark to come here to start the first church. He was on the board of Clallam Academy, the local businessman and manager for about 10 years. He was the first postmaster here, set up a post office in a log cabin on his farm. He was in the probate court in Hillsborough, and he was magistrate in the first year of the Oregon government, 1843. He was especially a very religious man, and his nickname in town was, as many of you have heard, God Almighty Smith. The story is the Indians named him this because that's the myth they always heard him talking to God Almighty. That's the story. But that's what he was called. He was very religious and very strict and a firm Sabbatarian. on Sunday. You did nothing, absolutely nothing. So later on, it became a fun day for the young people in town on Sundays when there wasn't much to do, because this affected Forest Grove. A lot of people were Sagittarians. So they'd drive their buggies down Elm Street past A.T. Smith's house, and he'd come out and tie up their horses, and they had to either stay at his house overnight until Monday or else walk back to town. He was a hard worker and was soon a very prosperous, being a hard worker and being on such good land, he was soon a fairly prosperous farmer, and he took full part in all the civic jobs that came around. And he was a very serious, responsible, and religious man. Now the second period I want to take up is the rural village. And this started in 1850 and runs through 1871 when Forest Grove, when the town was started. The start of Forest Grove was in early 1850 when Reverend Harvey Clark, Harvey Clark had started Follett Academy in late 1849. And the next spring, in 1850, he gave 260 acres of his donation land claim to Fulton Academy to support the school. A part of it became the lower third, the southern third of the campus, from about March Hall south to Pacific Street. That was the campus for Fulton Academy. And the rest of the land he had surveyed and platted into 43 blocks, and each block platted into four lots, all to be sold, and the money to go to support Fulton Academy to pay the teachers. This platting of Park's land, which extended from A Street to Hawthorne Street, and from 21st Street down to 16th Street, and this platting is the official first map of Forest Grove, and these block numbers and lot numbers on the Clark's plat are on the deeds of all the property. The numbers identify the property, every lot in this oldest part of Forest Grove. So that this land that Clark gave was the heart of Forest Grove, both geographically and in terms of the beginning of it. And it was called by many people, the region was called the Grove, as the rural village started to develop in the 1850s. It was called the Grove, often in lower case. Even the Oregonian would write articles about the Grove, until in 1859 the government accepted the name and changed it legally to Forest Grove. Now, not only was this land was given to Fulton Academy. Fulton Academy was the heart of Forest Grove in its early development, geographically and in terms of importance. For all of the 19th, or most of the 19th century, at least up into the 1880s, Fulton Academy was the major force in the growth of Forest Grove. Time and time again, people, men with families, would move here from other parts of the Oregon Territory, or East Party would move here so their children could go to Fulton Academy. There were Fulton Academy when it was started was the second school in the state of Oregon. The first one was the one called the Oregon Institute, which Jason Lee and the Methodist minister started, which then became the Lampe University later on. Fulton Academy was the second one. And it drew people to Forest Grove. Again and again you read in the records how they moved here so their children could go to Fulton Academy. Fulton Academy, there were schools, small rural schools, where they would simply take the 18-year-old girl who could read best or something like that, and she would take all the neighbors' children and help them at someone's house. But Fulton Academy was an organized school. It was stable. Its president and many of its teachers were ministers. Was definitely a Christian school, congregational school, in fact. Most of its teachers were college graduates, so that it remained throughout the 19th century the most important school and the most important course in Forest Grove. Now, Pacific University was then chartered in 1855, but through the 19th century, Carleton Academy was bigger than the college. At one time, I remember, Carleton Academy had 114 students, and Pacific University had 14 students, and that was up in the 1870s. Carleton Academy was grade school from kindergarten through high school, and then Pacific University went on from that. A third major force that helped determine what kind of a town this rural village was the churches that were established here. Within the first 10 years, well, by 1852, there were three churches in town, Congregational, Methodist, and Baptist, and each one of them built a church in town in 1859, the same year. Now, the churches played a major role in activities in this town. The men who were on the boards of the churches were on the boards of everything else. This is a general impression. This is not entirely true. At least there's a lot of crossover from them. The churches, at least the Congregational Church, I know for sure, the people there, were very active members of the Temperance Society at the time. They were very strong on no living. On Harvey Park, there is a land that was to be platted for lots. There is a stipulation on the deed of the land, there was, that no liquor could be given or consumed or sold on this land. And then as soon as the town was organized, they added an ordinance. They passed an ordinance that no liquor could be consumed or given or sold or thrown away on the property inside of Forest Grove. So that in this respect, and then the second time they passed in the 90s, they passed an ordinance again, repeating in effect the same thing. So the temperance movement, introduced and supported particularly by the churches, was a strong force in Forest Grove. And in the Civil War years, there was quite a bit of conflict here between the Unionists and the Secessionists. They weren't so much between the people who had slaves, the Southerners who had slaves and believed in slavery, and the Northerners who did not believe in slavery. The main thing that they argued about in Forest Grove, within my limited reading, was should a state be able to withdraw from the Union? This is what the argument was about. And in the pre-Civil War days, these arguments and fights got so strenuous that Forest Grove was notorious for a while, like some other college towns were in the 60s in this century, in the newspapers because of these Civil War fights. And they had to set up a home guard of college students to take care of them. The people that lived here in the village period, that is from 1850 or 55 to 71, before it becomes a town, were nearly all farmers. And when they moved into town, they bought either one lot, which was 200 by 200 feet, approximately an acre, or they bought a whole block in quite a number of cases, which was 4 acres, 400 by 400 feet. And each one of these was a small farm. Each farmhouse, each family had a barn with a lot of stock and chicken and bees and large garden and fruit orchards and nut orchards, and were practically self-sufficient. And this is what Forest Grove was like, particularly in this old part of Forest Grove. Up to 19th century, there were still barns on the lots, even on Main Street, right near town, in 1901. There were, one of the major problems as we'll come to is stock wandering around the street. And Mildred Rayer says there were still stock wandering around the street in the early 20th century, too, in Forest Grove. So it was a very rural town to live in. Now the third period is when Forest Grove became a town. In 1872, the state legislature gave the town a charter, and it set the boundaries of the town, which was from D, were from D Street to Hawthorne Street, and 24th to 16th Street. And that is the first, those are the first boundaries of Forest Grove, and they're what we now call the old part of Forest Grove. The state charter set up the kind of government that they would have, or no, set up the boundaries and the charter, and the people here set up the government. The government was a six-man board of trustees that were elected annually, and they elected one of their members to be president. And then they hired a recorder who kept the minutes and kept collected the taxes and paid the bills. And then a marshal, the police, and a street superintendent that had a population of about 600 people. Now, the first ordinances that they passed, I found very interesting and impressive because it showed what